You're listening to Central Time. I'm Rob Ferret. Coming up, find out how to encounter the unexpected in familiar places. Go for a walk with some psychogeography. First, it's time for Wisconsin Life. Producer Mary-Kate McCoy brings us a story about an app that helps users practice the Hmong language.
In the late 2000s, Apple popularized the phrase, "There's an app for that," highlighting the abundance of apps available for the iPhone. But when Annie Vang of Madison got into app development around the same time, she didn't see programs made in the Hmong language. Producer Hope Kerwin has more on the app she built and the way it's keeping native speakers and beginners connected to the language.
Eau Claire resident Tiffany Moore grew up speaking Hmong with her family, but as she got older, she started to lose some of her vocabulary and found herself struggling to remember words she didn't use frequently.
You know, you go to school, you speak English only. I didn't have any classes where they taught you in Hmong, so my Hmong language wasn't utilized as much as I had wanted to.
Moa was scrolling through Facebook one day when she saw a post about an iPhone app called Hmong Phrases. The app allows users to look up words and common phrases and hear an audio recording of how they're pronounced. Moa says she immediately downloaded it, hoping to test out her memory and her grammar.
When you grow up and you don't really speak fluent Hmong, you kind of create your own little sentences and you just formulate your own way of saying things, and it's not always correct. One that I do remember looking for was, "Can I pay for this?" Even now, like if I were to go shopping at like an Oriental store, I wouldn't know how to formulate this sentence properly.
The Hmong Phrases app was created by fellow Wisconsinite Annie Vang, who it turns out is also Moa's aunt. Vang is an iOS app developer from Madison, and she built the program 11 years ago after taking an app development course at Madison Area Technical College. Vang says she was inspired by advice from her professor, who encouraged her to build something she was passionate about.
Google Translate didn't exist at that time, and the Hmong language definitely was not in Rosetta Stone or any of the other language apps that were out there in the App Store. And so I took it upon myself that, you know, I want people to know who we are, who I am, and I felt that it was important to just, you know, have a presence in the App Store and leave a digital footprint of it.
11 years, constant updates, and one major rewrite later, the app now has over 4,000 downloads. Vang says she's always looking for ways to improve the program, taking feedback directly from users and from her parents, who are her primary beta testers. She says there have been some surprising requests from users about what they'd like to see added. She's been asked for more medical terms and Hmong names from people hoping to use them for babies.
They're interested in, like, how do you say a baby name? What does it mean? How do you pronounce it? And I thought it was kind of cool. So that's a feature that I'm currently building it right now, because we're such an oral language that if you just read the word, the name, you may not know how to pronounce it.
Beyond learning words and phrases, Vang says the app also allows native Hmong speakers to practice their intonation, an important part of the mostly oral language. She says young Hmong Americans often speak Hmong stiffly or struggle to hit the right tonal marks.
I can hear that a lot in the kids that are growing up there are not speaking it like fluently with maybe an elder. Even my nieces and nephews do the same thing, where when they say they're hungry, they're saying it like it doesn't have the right tone markers. And so you can understand what they're saying, but they may not know that they're saying it more English than Hmong.
This is something that niece and app user Moa says she appreciates about the program. Growing up, Moa says she spoke both English and Hmong to her parents, or sometimes a combination of the two, which she and other speakers call Hmonglish.
My parents knew enough of what I was trying to say that in the spot, because they understood it, they didn't say, "Oh no, you're saying that wrong." They'll just answer you.
Moa says she's not sure she'll ever fully master the Hmong language, but she's motivated to keep practicing so she can one day pass it on to her children and maintain the connection to her native language.
WPR's Hope Kerwin brought us that story about an app for the Hmong language. Wisconsin Life is a co-production of Wisconsin Public Radio and PBS Wisconsin in partnership with Wisconsin Humanities. Additional support comes from Lowell and Mary Peterson of Appleton. Find more Wisconsin Life at wisconsinlife.org and on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram. I'm Mary-Kate McCoy.
This is Central Time. Now, how well do you know your local landscape, your neighborhood, your community, your local park? For a lot of us, we really only experience a small portion of the place we live, on the paths we travel the most, the roads to and from work, the store, and so on. But we can get something more out of that local landscape with a change of our mindset. That's one goal of something called psychogeography. It's a fancy word. It means, in practice, walking and exploring in a way that's intentionally unintentional. Our next guest is a Wisconsin artist who uses psychogeography as an inspiration for his art, and you could join in at 800-642-1234. Do you have a favorite place to go for a regular walk? When you walk, do you have to have a destination in mind, or do you just start wandering? And do you find ways to connect, to observe the places you walk around? Call it at 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234. Or you can email ideas@WPR.org. Jeremy Weinberg is a designer, educator, and visual artist based in Madison. Jeremy, welcome to the studio.
Hi, thanks for having me.
All right, tell us more about this concept of psychogeography. What is it?
I kind of think of it like the practice of mapping your thoughts out onto the environment, and then at the same time having the environment mapped onto your thoughts. So it's a sort of a two-way street where you're bringing what you have going on internally to bear on the environment, but you're also allowing the environment to directly impact what's going on internally.
And what's some of the history of this idea?
Well, I think the term comes from the Situationists International and a particular person named Guy Debord. But the practice of it and the techniques that it uses have been going on for a long time before that. I think for the Situationists International, it was a way of subverting things like the way that the city was planned out for you to get from point A to point B, and wandering or allowing yourself to drift was a way of getting around how people want you to move through the city. So it was almost like a form of protest for them. But earlier, I think and this is the part that I felt the most drawn to, was the surrealists, who really saw the city as this place of mystery that you dive into and explore and unravel and come up with interesting ways to make work, make connections that you wouldn't have necessarily made before, to meet interesting people, and to get a level of detail from your surroundings that you don't normally get when you're just kind of stumbling around on your way to work or to the market or what have you.
In just a bit, I want to talk about how this inspires your art. But for people at home who are thinking, okay, this sounds kind of cool, I want to give it a try. You mentioned there are kind of methods, not rules exactly, but psychogeography methods that we can use. If somebody wants to go for that walk, maybe in their own neighborhood, their community, how can they get started on this?
Well, it's really about sort of leading with your nose, paying attention to what is in front of you and allowing things that you're seeing to act as clues, to cultivate a sense of curiosity, to create a direction or a movement. There's actually this really great quote that I've used when I taught projects that deal with it from an artist named Robert McFarlane. I can read it because
sure.
He just says it so wonderfully that I don't know that I can
go for it. Yeah,
really do too much more in explaining it. But he begins by saying psychogeography, a beginner's guide. Unfold a street map of London, place a glass rim down anywhere on the map, and draw around its edge. Pick up the map, go out into the city and walk the circle, keeping as close as you can to the curve. Record the experience as you go in whatever medium you favor, film, photograph, transcript, manuscript, tape. Catch the textural runoff of the streets, the graffiti, the branded litter, the snatches of conversation, cut for sign, log the data stream, be alert to happenstances of metaphors, watch for visual rhymes, coincidences, analogies, family resemblances, the changing moods of the street. Complete the circle and the record ends. Walking makes for content, footage for footage.
Now, I think I'm better at getting into that kind of mindset and doing that kind of random walk when I go to a new place. I'm really bad at it close to home, which seems like possibly like a place that would be really ripe for that kind of cool, innovative discovery.
Yeah, I think it works in either way. For me, it's a way to explore a new area and dive deep into it and become familiar with it. But it's also a way to explore familiar areas and to make them new again, to see them differently. And there's all sorts of techniques that people have come up with to sort of do this on familiar territory. One of the surrealist techniques that I think is great is take a map of another city and use it to navigate the city that you're in. So it's a way of sort of making you go or move through something that you're used to moving through in a very different way, and using that as a way to create the stimulus that you don't normally get when you move through that environment. So it's maybe a little different tact when you're familiar with it, because you have to do something to make it different and to be able to sort of separate you from the everyday mindset that you're used to moving it through, to get into, to be able to see it differently.
We're talking with Wisconsin-based artist and educator Jeremy Weinberg about the creative and emotional benefits of wandering and exploring our familiar environments. You can join in at 800-642-1234. Do you do this, these kind of random walks, looking at things in a new way, maybe in your own community, or in the early days of COVID, when there wasn't a lot better to do than go for a walk? Did you find new and interesting ways, turning a different way on that street you turn left instead of right like you usually would? Join in at 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234, or email ideas@WPR.org. We'll pick up the conversation coming up on Central Time. It's Central Time. I'm Rob Ferret. We continue our talk with Jeremy Weinberg, a Wisconsin-based artist and educator, about the idea of psychogeography, walking and exploring our environments by following our minds, not our schedules, finding different ways to look at familiar territory, getting inspiration by doing so. You could join in at 800-642-1234. If you're an artist, have you found inspiration just by walking around? Have you trained yourself in some ways to seek out some artistic inspiration from a familiar environment? If you like to go for a lot of walks, do you shake things up, break the routine, find random ways to appreciate that local walk? Call in now at 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234. Jeremy, a lot of your art is inspired by this psychogeographical mindset. Can you give us a couple examples of what's come out of that?
Sure. The last piece, I think, that I spent a lot of time in that sort of state of mind at had to do with Lake Winnebago. And my mother-in-law has a house on Lake Winnebago, so we spend a lot of time there and have been going there repeatedly over the last, since I've been in Wisconsin, so like the last 15 years. And I wanted to make a piece that dealt with this particular place, but I wanted to bring in some other viewpoints. So I asked people that went to school there, that lived there, for some video documents or photo documents that they might have taken of the place that have stood out to them. And then I sort of threw those together with some of my own video documents that I'd taken over the years, and created this video installation where a lot of these points of view were kind of mixed up and projected in a space that was at the University of Oshkosh, which is in University of Wisconsin, Oshkosh, sure, at the Alan Preeb Gallery. And that was last fall. So the thing I think that that really made it interesting to me was that all of the projections that were happening in the room were bounced around by a lot of reflective material that was also hanging in the room. So it's sort of hard to describe, but essentially you're walking into a space that's located nearby the lake shore, and you're having images of the lake sort of bouncing all around you. So for people that live on the lake or by the lake or have to deal with things that are particular to Lake Winnebago, like the lake flies and things like that, it was a different way to experience it from how they're used to doing. So my hope was that, you know, people would be able to sort of come out of it seeing things a little differently than they're used to. So that's one of them. I have a few other projects too that about other places that I've been interested in, but a lot of them are relatively local.
And do you have kind of eureka moments? You're out there, you're walking, you're trying to do this sort of psychogeography type observation. Do things like sort of gradually build up, or do you have aha moments where you're like, aha, I could do this inspired by this part of the environment?
I think really for me, what I have are the like thousand little aesthetic moments that I do the best I can to document, either by taking a video or a photo or by doing a drawing or just like trying to make a memory that stays around long enough that I can, you know, somehow work it in. But for me, it's an aesthetic experience that usually is what draws my attention. You know, one of the things I remember particularly after moving here and doing walks like this that I wasn't prepared for was stumbling across some of the Native American effigy mounds and not knowing anything about that because I grew up in another part of the country. So to me, that was just mind blowing that there are these things that I stumbled across that, you know, were from thousands of years ago that cultures that had nothing to do with the city built, and here they are in this particular neighborhood.
Even if we're not going to make art based on our observations, I've seen people make a case for the benefits, our emotional well-being, our connection to our surroundings. Can you talk about that a little?
Yeah, I mean, I think it's one of the things that allows you to do is just like read a level of complexity into a place, almost like the kind of complexity that you might like read into another person that you meet. You get a sense of a particular mood of a place, and you can sort of have a conversation with it by just looking at the way, you know, the plants are growing around each other, looking at how, like, you know, there may be paths that have been worn into a particular park where people go off of the walkways and make their own walkways and what happens there, and following those and seeing where they go instead, or finding traces of animals or people's dogs or discarded clothing that might have been left somewhere that, you know, there's got to be some kind of story behind. So for me, like, this is all like it's just a deeper experience of a place. And for places that you're visiting regularly, I feel like it's like getting to know an elder or somebody that you know, has been around for a long time, and realizing that there's a depth to their experiences and that you can learn a lot from them.
Yeah, and the time element, the Lake Winnebago thing you mentioned, getting older pictures and images from there, and just the idea of going to the same place again and again and seeing how it can change, maybe just through the seasons, adds a lot of depth.
Yeah, and so like one place that I feel like I like to haunt is in Madison. It's a park in the Vilas neighborhood, Bear Mound Park, which is the first place that I stumbled on an effigy mound. But there's also these beautiful old oak trees there. And going there different times of years, you see different things. There's not only the leaves changing, but I've seen, you know, all of these milkweed pods like open up and mm-hmm. create these like flows of all this white fluffy material that just, when you sort of put yourself in like an insect point of view, moving through all of that, it's like being in a whole nother world. But it's just this little, you know, one block circle. But inside of that circle, there's just this whole microcosm of not only like all these natural things, but this like level of cultural history that goes back like thousands of years. To me, it's just a fascinating place.
And just our last half a minute or so, leave us with some inspiration for somebody who says, yeah, I want to try this. One quick thing they might do after they turn off the radio.
So I think just going out and spinning yourself around and opening your eyes up and following that first thing that you see is a good way to start. You know, if you have the opportunity to go someplace new, I feel like it's a little bit easier because everything is kind of something to jump into. But there's always new things around you if you just try to shift your perspective a little bit and see it from a different angle.
Jeremy, we'll leave it there. Thanks a lot for coming up to the studio.
Yeah, thanks so much for having me.
That's Jeremy Weinberg, designer, educator, and visual artist based in Madison. He joined us to talk about the art of psychogeography, finding inspiration by wandering and exploring around the places we live and beyond. I'm Rob Ferret. This is Central Time.